Welcome to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, providing practical knowledge and tools for citizen journalists. I'm Colin Reinsmith, digital media producer at the Citizen Media Law Project. This week, I'll speak with Sam Bayard about copyright and fair use in Savage versus the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Last week, we blogged about how conservative talk show host Michael Savage sued the Council on American-Islamic Relations for copyright infringement, and how the suit was a misunderstanding of copyright law. This week, we're joined by Sam Bayard, assistant director for the CMLP and author of The Post, to talk more about this story and how fair use applies to this case. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Colin.
First, a little background on the story. Sam, you wrote in your post that Savage claims that Kerr violated his copyrights by excerpting a 4-plus-minute portion of his radio show and posting it on Kerr's website. You write the excerpt was and remains attached as an audio file to an article on Kerr's website called, quote, "National Radio Host Goes on Anti-Muslim Tirade," unquote. Now, the Kerr article criticizes Savage's comments and calls on listeners to, quote, contact companies that advertise on Michael Savage's nationally syndicated radio program to express their concerns about the host's recent anti-Muslim tirade, unquote. Now, Savage responded with a complaint claiming, quote, "Kerr destroyed the value of the copyright material and the performance as a whole." In addition, it claims, quote, "Kerr attempted to silence Michael Savage by stealing his work, misrepresenting it, and then seeking to have advertisers drop his show. This is a violation of Michael Savage's rights to speech and religious beliefs," unquote. Now, listeners can read more about the complaint on our blog at citmedialaw.org. Sam, can you talk a little bit about how copyright law protects Kerr's use of Savage's copyrighted material in this case?
Sure. U.S. copyright law recognizes what is known as the Fair Use Doctrine. And the Fair Use Doctrine is found in Section 107 of the Copyright Act. And this section basically says that certain limited uses of someone's copyright-protected work will be deemed a non-infringement if it is a, quote, fair use. Now, the statute gives some examples of what might constitute fair use, such as works of criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, and research. And it also gives a four-factor test that courts are meant to apply to evaluate whether any particular use is a fair use.
And could you walk us through these factors to give us a better understanding of how they applied to this case?
Sure. The four factors are, in order, number one, the purpose and character of the use, including whether the use is of a commercial nature or is for nonprofit educational purposes. The second factor is the nature of the copyrighted work. The third factor is the amount and substantiality of the portion used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole. And the fourth factor is the effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work. Let's start with the first factor, the purpose and character of the use. Here, the inquiry is largely whether the use of someone's copyrighted work is a, quote, transformative use. And this comes from a Supreme Court case, Campbell v. Acuff Rose Music, which was a case in the early 90s that had to do with Roy Orbison's song Pretty Woman and Two Live Crew's sort of remix or adaptation of it. And the Supreme Court in that case said that one of the most important factors and the critical inquiry on the first factor of the fair use test is whether a work is transformative. And that means that it does something brand new with the old work. It gives it a new purpose or it deals with it in a new way. Now, in Kerr's case, I think it's very clear that Kerr is using Savage's work in a transformative way because Kerr is criticizing Savage's work. They are putting it in a new context. They're flipping it on its head. They're using it for the purposes of criticizing it, not for purposes of substituting it.
How about the second factor, the nature of the copyrighted work?
Sure. This factor is less important than the first. And for one reason or another, the courts have largely reduced this test to whether the work is sort of more creative, like a novel or a film, something that's sort of fanciful, or whether it's more fact-based, and, you know, like a biography or a work of theory or a news article, something like that. So in this case, this factor weighs in favor of fair use, again, because the material from Savage's radio show that Kerr is using is not, though perhaps Savage has a different view on this, it's not important for its expression. It's important because it's relaying certain facts or opinions about the world.
Now, the third factor, the amount and substantiality of the portion used, also favors fair use.
Yes, in my opinion, it does. And substantiality, by the way, just means sort of the importance. So this factor looks at, does the use take a great deal of the original work? And does it take the most important part of it? So, a famous case asked, does the work take the heart of the older original work? Because if so, it sort of usurps the market for the work. It kind of guts the work of its importance, and that counts against fairness.
And you say that in your post that, in fact, Savage's argument is to the contrary because Kerr took isolated portions of the work out of context.
Yeah, basically. I mean, first of all, it's just 4 minutes out of what's an hour-long program, and that's not very much as far as it goes. And the other thing is that Kerr certainly isn't somehow taking the heart of that program. In fact, Savage's complaint alleges just the opposite, namely that Kerr is taking isolated excerpts out of context. And an important thing to know about this amount and substantiality factor is that it relates very closely to the fourth factor that we'll talk about next. So if a plaintiff does poorly on the fourth factor, they're unlikely to have success on the third factor too, because all of this, how much of the work you're using really relates to how it affects the market for the original work.
Which is the fourth factor, the effect of the use upon the potential market for the work.
This is a really interesting aspect of the case because in one sense, Savage claims, of course you've affected the market for my work. You're criticizing me and you're telling my sponsors not to advertise with me. And what could be more of a negative effect on the market for my work or the value of my work than what you're doing, Kerr? The law is very clear on this point, and that is that this fourth factor, the harm that it recognizes, is the harm that occurs to a copyrighted work because the new work substitutes itself for the old one. And that is a purely...
In this case, it's not likely.
No, Kerr's work is about as far as you could get from a substitute for Savage's radio program. The whole point is to criticize the program and to call on its readers to basically boycott the program.
So why did you feel compelled to write about this case?
Michael Savage filed this lawsuit, and the real problem with the lawsuit is that he's using copyright as a sort of blunt tool to silence criticism of himself and of his work, and that the copyright laws are aimed and were originally conceived as a way of giving incentives to creators and authors in order to create innovative works. And it does that by giving them economic incentives so that they can exploit their work and make money for it.
But in this case, it's being used in the opposite.
No, in this case, has nothing to do with economic exploitation of the work. Kerr's use of Savage's radio program doesn't affect his economic ability to exploit the work, except insofar as maybe people being critical of him will make less people like him. But, too bad. The First Amendment allows for this type of criticism, and copyright law is not aimed at redressing that type of harm.
You've been listening to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, a production of the Citizen Media Law Project at Harvard Law School's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. This is our last podcast for 2007, but we'll be back in January with episode number 7. In the meantime, stay tuned at our blog at citmedialaw.org.